Well, Michael and I would like to welcome you back to another recording of the Saturn-Earth Connection. Our website is helloearth.info, and today is Tuesday, April the 10th, 2018. And this is hour 382 with Michael from Maui, Hawaii. Michael was taken to a huge luminescent sphere near Saturn as a student visitor and returned to Maui. With their amazing flowing dialogue, and occasionally we hear from Shaharon or Waikumti, using Michael to transmit his voice into the recording. And before I get started, or before Michael gets started, I want to thank James from North Wales, Pennsylvania. James, we all appreciate you sending Historicity Productions a check for $20 to cover all of the hours on the web. Which in the old days, when it used to be a lot more expensive than that, but now it's just, that's very inexpensive rent, $20 a month. So thank you, James. We appreciate you. And hello, Michael.
Hello, Curtis.
Well, welcome back from the Far East.
Yeah, it's pretty far away. You went to China. Hong Kong, started off in Beijing, went over to Hong Kong, then cruised up the coastline of China, visiting various cities, stopped in on Shanghai a bit. Shanghai was where I really wanted to do some research, because it's really an old city. You know, you remember the term, got Shanghai'd.
Yes.
It's a way of being like abducted.
I haven't heard that forever.
Yeah, well, they really did Shanghai. They did have trapdoors on the places. And especially Frisco had a bunch of trapdoors. Guys walk in, get them drunk, step on the trapdoor, pull the string, down he goes. Oh, next thing you know, he's on a ship on to Shanghai. Got to work his way through. Well, because China is productive, you know, they had stuff to make, sell, or whatever. But British held them down in the Opium Wars, you know, because they were getting too productive. And you can see what has happened. I wanted to see what had happened when, you know, you set them free to free enterprise. Because under, you know, the People's Revolution under Mao Zedong, basically took away a lot of the enterprise away from the people. Shanghai was an example of a productive city, all of a sudden just stopping, like mid-stride. And exactly that, I mean, there's like these old structures, nothing in between, you know, 100-year-old stuff. And then within the past 15 years or 20, maybe the longest 20 years, but really a lot sooner than that, 10 years. Now you got beautiful, brand new buildings, absolutely gorgeous architecture. And these architects were not necessarily from China. I mean, they were building their dream buildings, and they were architects from around the world, you know, coming over with beautiful sculpted tall buildings. And of course, they have some unimaginative structures that were, you know, built for housing. But the banks and stuff over there have really gotten big and strong. In Shanghai, well, you know, all the cities that I visited, but especially in Shanghai, which, you know, I wanted to take a good look at and get the feel of the people there. And the people's memory, people who are younger than I am, remember the days in which things weren't quite developed yet. They're, you know, 25 years ago, they're still carrying honeypots to the river. I mean, they had no flush toilets. And, you know, they always give their job to the lowest in the household. You know, less privileged child would carry the honey pots, which, you know, they look nice, you know, porcelain cover on it, but they take it down there and it's full of excrement. you know, human excrement and just dump it in the river. Needless to say, the river wasn't very good to use as a source of fresh water. But even then, you know, local wells can get polluted. So things aren't, you know, the best in terms of sanitation. But suddenly, boom, you know, when I visited China back in the Olympics, before the Olympics, the renminbi was, you know, somewhat of an insignificant thing. Didn't need much of it to be considered rich. Now, if you have the same amount of money, renminbi, the yuan is basically one of the currencies, like a $5 bill or something, or a dollar bill. And the yuan, if you had a whole bunch of that, so many of it, back when, you know, you were considered rich, today that's pocket change. And there's, needless to say, there's super inflation. But what has happened is that China got hooked into the economy of a capitalist economy. And needless to say, they are now the second largest economy in the world. And if you don't watch out, they'll capture us, United States, as an economic engine. They on the road, going to visit some of the old sites, you know, Confucius Temple, we had Confucian writing. But on the way, on the highway, which is really overbuilt, it looks like maybe they can get along with two lanes, but they build eight lanes. You know, it's like, okay, four one way, four going the other way, and there are two cars on it. But they really expect some major growth. So, yeah. And on the road, there were two, obviously, American-made tractors on top of a flatbed truck getting hauled into the manufacturing center of Shanghai. It makes stuff over there. On the outskirts, it can make anything. And they were there in these, I guess it would be, you know, if you had a small farm, that would be the size of the tractor you need. A typical tractor with the, you know, could pull a whole bunch of plows, maybe a 10-row plow or something like that. Not especially big, but definitely not a garden tractor. But it was the typical green of John Deere. That's what I said. Wow, that's John Deere's on there. Wonder what they're going to do with them. And they were like going off, and they're riding side by side on our bus caravan into the city. And suddenly it dawned on me, they're going to back engineer the thing. In other words, they're going to make a rubber stamp copy of American John Deere tractor because they consider that one probably one of the best to copy. Mm-hmm. And go into competition with John Deere, stealing everything they can from it. And that's their problem. They have no original thought.
That's what China does.
Yeah, they copy. It's the same thing Japan did. You know, mm-hmm. Japan's logo at one time back in the 60s. Was we can make it better and we can make it cheaper. China's statement is we can steal it better than anybody. Mm-hmm. But right now, that's the part that's changing. But they got some pretty awesome looking harbors, commercial harbors. Take a good look, count the number of big cranes there. These cranes that we're on for unloading containers. Mm-hmm. And got a good number, a big, big number of cranes. Also saw a bunch of ships anchored in the harbor, which isn't a good sign. And they were high, basically way up and out of the water lines, way up. Yeah, they were empty. Yes, freighters.
Idle.
Yeah. So, you know, they were running high for a while. But the concept is that the growth happens so fast that the culture and people are, you know, they're enjoying some money, but they are losing a lot of that there. But they're also not coming up with, you know, the kind of manners that make for a good society. So I was thinking of the Confucian temple there, taught a lot of good values. But they forgot that. Now it's just a tourist attraction to them. And basically is, you know, the more money you can get, because there's, like, China has the most millionaires in the world, I think, right now, for any one country, because they got a whole gigantic population to back the probability of having millionaire, you know, in the billions of people there. So the most millionaires anyway. But my assessment is that the world has to actually become modernized. I believe that it is expected of us to really modernize the world. Not to cause our planet to regress. I mean, we can't lose the values of essentially hard work and effort, original thought, inventiveness. All of these things come out of a society that is got time on its hands. And one of the things that's good about China's time on its hands is that the people who are retired are retired. They're really, you know, relaxing. But the young ones are, they want to get ahead. They work very hard, but not nearly as hard as us. They just recently adopted a 5-day work week. And before that, it wasn't, I don't know, they tried to push it as far as they could. Probably, maybe, hopefully a 7-day work week, 10 hours a day. But, of course, that people were jumping out of windows already. So, a 5-day work week, paying people extra. So they're running into all the problems of human ability. So, and then they decided rather to reinvent everything to start copying a society that operates. If they copy Europe, well, then they're going to have a really easy time, because Europe's work days are short and their work week is short and their volunteer vacations are a lot, and nowhere as bad as the U.S. Some of the Europeans, when I visited over there, were very surprised. They thought they might want to live in the U.S. until they found out, you mean that's all the vacation that they have? Yeah, and some don't even have it. And what about retirement? Well, you gotta, you know, make your own 401k. You're on your own, you know. You know, what do you mean you're on your own? You know, means that if you don't save up enough money and invest it well, you may not have enough to live on, because Social Security is definitely not enough. And, you know, European guys are like, oh, I didn't know that. I'll stay here. And I think China's people might be coming that way eventually, but right now it's still kind of a hard workplace. Inventiveness and creativity is not going to go very far with the attitude in education in China. It's not like the education in, let's say, Taiwan, which is basically Chinese, the same people. They're culturally very different because they were free people when they ran away to Taiwan. At the time it was called, there's another name for Taiwan. Formosa, I believe it was. And over there, people really struggle to get smart, really smart. And they go to night school, cram school, something like in Japan, cram school, extra school, college. They try to get as much smarts as they can and then get aligned with other smart people, and they tend to want to get educated in the United States. China, the people work really hard in primary school, maybe high school. If they can make it and get through there to the point where they can qualify for college, then they just play. Because it's like if you can get there, then you're in a different class altogether. You're in the middle class. And then it's like, that's all. That's all you need. And the industry doesn't rely on inventiveness, creativity. It's not like how Microsoft's growth curve. I was in the culture of IBM. You know, that was a white shirt and tie and suit. And you go over there with a briefcase and act smart and sell your product, IBM. But then came Microsoft, guys who developed the DOS operating system, and then made everybody pay them a little bit for using it. It turned out the best design and business model. And, of course, Bill Gates was one of the ones. Actually, the business is designed around Bill Gates' enterprise, not so much about the software. He was pretty much a pirate at one time, considered a pirate, was able to back engineer a lot of the good software away from the creative minds. But China doesn't have that, a bunch of free creative minds set up on the side, because these guys who go to school over there, once they go there, they're not thinking, you know, like, wow, I want to make a great product, you know, then I can sell it, you know. Or this idea is pretty cool, I just want to go down there, you know, and work on it in my garage. They don't do that. So they're limited in their upward expansion as far as an economy, because their creativity is low.
Their space station came down. Or they lost control of their space station, the Chinese, and that came down while you were gone.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Unlike people, Elon Musk.
Well, he sent up his car. That's a very big... See, Elon Musk is not a enterprising inventor. He is someone who brings technology that is. Mm-hmm. He will not go with you might say, something iffy. He'll take something that is and present it to the public. You know, electric car was from the 1918, like that, you know. Mm-hmm. But he said, time is now. And there was a whole bunch of people, you know, converting regular cars to electric cars. And he was able to move it because he had some capital, because, you know, inventing PayPal at one time was a big difference. I mean, online banking, you know, it was far from, it was actually, you know, something that gave a type of script along, and it changed the face of the internet, you know. Mm-hmm. Oracle Systems was one of the guys that made the internet work. Because of his financial embedding of his software. On the side, you don't really realize Oracle really shaped the commerce of the internet. But on the little man's scale, PayPal was, you know, pretty cool, because it gave the consumer the ability to, you know, shop online while keeping their own money supply, you know, instead of sending checks. They didn't need checks, you know, they could throw some money up in PayPal or use credit, whatever, all these things. Ultimately, it was such a good product that eBay bought it away for big money, and now eBay's not doing good at all, because eBay couldn't face the new challenges of a different type of internet commerce, and that commerce being online, changing Amazon over there, doing all this. So the shaping of the economies and the movement of finance and product and service all being reshaped. China went along with it, a certain level of controls built into their internet. But you still have great growth companies over there and companies that actually have bought some of our less great companies, like search engine company Yahoo, absorbed by Alibaba. You might say Alibaba is kind of a marketing, not small time, big time. So anyway, all of these things are changing the way things are going. So seeing that, you know, when you look at Russia, my recent visit to going up to what used to be called Stalingrad. Now it's, or Leningrad. Now is back to its old name. And the place showed the struggle of communism over there, having such terrible looking structures and buildings. And the most beautiful of all the structures there was not because of communism. It's being preserved, of course. But those were there during the time of the monarchs. So looking at the present move, there is no sign that Russia has even continued, because they continued their communist model until the breakdown of the Soviet Union. And ultimately, what I'm saying is, just taking a look at it, the world, there is no desire. I don't believe any of the celestial group looking down upon our planet looks at the progress and wants it to stop. Actually, the progress is quite glorious, good, and inventive. And it is us who got to adapt to it, because in my feel of where I have been in going to the New Jerusalem out there orbiting Saturn, it is a extremely advanced society, and the functioning of people there who are both mortal and immortal, having a complete blend of all levels of, you might say, sentient beings, from the mortal to, you might say, the angels of light, those that I couldn't even see, perhaps. They're here. But the others up there, of course, could see them, but I couldn't. But they were there, blended into a society of highly technical abilities. It was asked, actually, as proposed or tried by Jesus Christ to explain what is heaven like. And it says heaven is like, he tried to give the pearl of great price, the star of that, to describe if you had a business and you were a pearl merchant and you sold pearls all day long. And every merchant knows they're looking, you know, possibly there could be one thing that could free me from this. Because I've got this great inventory of pearls, but they never seem to set me free. I'm always, you know, making a nickel and a dime on a pearl. You know, it's not like I can sell one pearl and I'm free forever. If I could just find that one pearl that could free me from all of this. And this is where the pearl of great price came in, when this pearl merchant found this pearl of great price. What he did was he sold everything he had to possess it, because it represented absolutely a great freedom. There's concept out there which thinks about moving society backwards. That was communism. That was Pol Pot. That was Mao Zedong. That was the communist way. It just didn't liberate the creative force of life in a sentient individual to express. And whether it be through art or through creative invention, they would be held back if it, in these other forms of governances. And I see China, and I look at it. I've got to see this great, you know, line in the sand between, you know, a society that was moving great. Shanghai was going to, you know, it was like heavy commerce at one time, and then it just came to a screeching halt. And there was definitely this line. I mean, absolutely old structures and the sudden appearance of the new. And that was a definite time period. And as I said in the beginning, people were still, you know, back then, when it was accelerating, there was not very long in people's memory when they were just carrying honeypots. Yeah, but for us, the flush toilet was invented in England, I believe. And that was in the early 19th century, or the later 19th century, because they had to first create running water, you know, piped water. And it changed the picture of society. Although the old Roman governments, they did have two systems in ancient Rome. But it was nowhere near as modern as what we have today. But anyway, they modernized their thing. And of course, one of the problems with their waters was their lead pipes made everybody crazy after a while. So it probably was the downfall of the Roman Empire. Lead. There was the same problem, I believe, in China. But running water was a problem. Oh. Right up to the recent developments. So anyway, when I look at us today and our smartphones and the things that connect us. I remember my guide having this little thing in his, I don't know where he pulled it out. I mean, he had this tight leotard on. At, I don't know, you know, where he hid it. It was like invisible, but he pulled it out and did everything. He played games on it, and it was just like our smartphone, except thin as a sheet of paper. But it could become relatively stiff, and then it just went to like nothing, or like a pencil or something, very much like that, maybe even smaller than that. But it's where we're headed right now in our technology. So we will eventually get that way, and sometimes the technologies that interface with our physical realm. Of course, there are other technologies that are going to be interfacing with our soul, you might say, and it's is the reason that we have been created, because of the fact that we are the bearers of a soul which can be transplanted and actually ascended or manipulated or moved toward a eternal structure through various stages of ascent in our life design. This talk that our planet is going to get crunched and be thrown back into, like a primitive society, and how dangerous it is. I don't believe that that is the case. I think the dangerous things are weapons of mass destruction. Those things are the ones that need to be actually put into check. You know, so people who want to put on their big boy pants from North Korea and say that, you know, we're now able to discuss terms as a nuclear nation, will eventually find out and we'll find out that it is not a good card to hold, because it is an almost useless card to hold, because you will not have anyone dealing with you for the betterment of your society if you're not willing to do the opposite side of it, which is not to create weapons of mass destruction, but just to create. And just that idea of creativity unleashed is not where North Korea is at right now. So China's just sort of breaking through. They're very much in the copy stages. Japan was in the 1960s. So eventually they'll become creative. This is the uplift in the planet, the entire planet, in which they will share eventually the productive resources. So the planet will be essentially elevated to a higher standard. Even if the population increases, we will have the ways and means by which to make it possible. You know, at one time they was talking about from the days of the elite, who are considered the nobles, and they said, "What will our servants do if they, you know, have this done and this is done automatically, and a machine does that, or our servants will have nothing to do?" Well, that's not the case. Actually, we spread around a lot until the servants are at a level in which these people lived. I remember visiting the private bathroom or bath, you might say, of King Henry VIII in his summer home. I said, "My goodness, this is where he ate? There's a big table there." And he goes like, "It's not very glamorous. It's a big table." This is, and he says, "Oh, this is where, you know, his bath was, and it's over here is where the lady was." Her. Oh, it's not even, oh, that's pretty raw, you know. Yeah. So, and they didn't have a good time back then. Even at the royal, maybe they didn't have to carry the water up the steps and stuff and dump it in and make all these trips up and down with buckets. But actually, we don't have that problem anymore. It's long gone. They often had honey pots back then, carried by their helps. But people in China remember them functioning very much at that level. So anyway, the progress in just a decade for China is phenomenal. It is absolutely phenomenal how fast they move. No wonder Donald Trump all excited about Make America Great, because it's being left behind big time. There are a train over there, maglev train. It showed age. I mean, it's been around a while. I says, "Oh, it's not shiny and brand new. No, it's like, looks like it's been flowing through the breeze of high velocity for a long time." Yeah, so it's got many trips on it. So I said, "Wow, we're big time, you know, slow." The big deal that we have is trying to ride an old train up in the Yukon, like the old gold miners did. They said, "Oh, this is an old train, and slow and steady and bumpy and, you know, like archaic." But as far as riding a train in the United States, nowhere near as good as the Japan's bullet train, or even the maglevs. And of course, now with someone like Elon Musk doing that tunneling, you can have trains like just moving at a phenomenal speed. Or even the friction from moving through wind will be eliminated, you know, having it move through essentially like a vacuum or high altitude. So those things will be accomplished, and it won't take long. Oh, we're not.
That's right. It won't take long.
It won't take long. China's an example of how fast we can do something. It means that, you know, they're just human, just like us. But the entire planet is going to actually has to ascend to a level that can interface closely with the technology of the celestials. And we're moving. They want us to move that direction. In fact, you might say they're kind of guiding us, because a hint was given by my company, the Dano, who told me that, oh, don't worry about the technology. You're going to get it. You know, don't concentrate on this part, because it's not important. As important as understanding your destiny. And those seven psychic circles of cosmic attainment, divine destiny that must be attained and can be super accelerated in our lifetime, is something that is so important to live life, not just to live it because you're going to die, but to fulfill an enriched destiny, because that actually builds the reality of the nature of oneself. Yeah, let's see.
Okay, we're rolling again, Michael.
Yeah, phone call, okay. Or something. Yeah, our planet is not necessarily up to par yet, but it's not because we're getting too fancy or something. We need to actually ascend a lot more. The Urantia book, by the way, of course, was in the 1930s. That's a long time ago. You know, of course, it popularized itself 20 years later. But even then, it's not up to par yet in terms of becoming a true device of enlightenment. But they are looking at our development, and in light of where we are now versus the 1930s, some of the aspects of the older structures throughout China, or Japan, even Japan, were expressions of back in the 1930s in the turn of the century. So these things are just historic. The newest stuff is moving at a high clip, and buildings are being put together that represent that. But in no way can any of our structures match that orbiting structure around Saturn, the New Jerusalem, and its ability to house physical beings in the millions and millions. I mean, it's just easy to put them. Because when I looked at, you mean you're housing so many million people, 4 million people, or 1.5 million people here? Well, it depends on the city, and I'm looking at it, and it's like, it's not that hard to do, I guess. And given some of the areas, which are sort of struggling because haven't had the kind of finance, I went over to Bali, which is the size of my island, Maui. And it has like a couple million people there. And it's like, oh yeah, they got some heavy traffic. But people are happy. They're really happy there. They enjoy a lifestyle that is conducive to happiness. And I think that's one of the things that has to be balanced out in terms of where we end up. Anyway, that's just some of the observations of my trips around the world, and what I look at and what I get pointed toward.
And you compare things to the New Jerusalem all the time. It's just like,
yeah, all the time.
Not quite the high technology.
Yeah,
I guess we're getting there slowly, but with people like Elon Musk really paving the way for things people never even dreamed of. He's doing great. While you were gone, Last Tuesday, April the 3rd, was a 50-year anniversary for the the movie 2001: A Space Odyssey, Stanley Kubrick's masterpiece, I mean, if people haven't seen it, or if they have seen it, they should see that movie again. I have a copy, and I should look at it again. I've seen it many times, and I remember just reading the book and just thinking about, what was his name, David Bauman, or he was up there all by himself with a computer who was fighting him. It was it's an amazing story. The first 42 or 40 some minutes of the movie, there's not a word spoken, and people didn't know what to think when it first came out. Didn't get good reviews at all, but it has lasted these 50 years, and it is. I mean, the story is just phenomenal, and it's Arthur C. Clarke's masterpiece. The man who invented geosynchro orbit with our GPS and satellites and, 22,500 miles or 22,300 miles? We can park things out there. But the Chinese space station nearly hit Bali. I don't know how close it was, but that's what it came close to. They didn't know where it was going to come down. I didn't lose you, did I, Michael?
No, I'm here.
Okay, yeah. Good.
You're quiet. Kind of falling asleep.
Did it break or something?
Yeah. I'm still getting jet lag, so I just...
You have jet lag.
Yeah, I was going to do a recording today.
You were thinking of postponing today?
Well, you captured me, so I...
I called. Well, you didn't call.
Call because I was going to sleep. Anyway, so I wasn't sure if I was going to be all that sharp.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, not very sharp right now. Anyway.
Well, what can you tell us about the New Jerusalem that you haven't told us before?
What would you want to know? It's aspects that are maybe, open to your curiosity.
Tell me about how sweet the air was.
Okay, the air was clean. Okay, that's easy. And the remnant of it was, it was like fragrant. Yeah, and that it wasn't perfumed, you might say. You go to some restrooms and they're like heavily perfumed, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that way. It just had a type of atmosphere that was pleasant. And what I mean by pleasant is that it had an element in it, which, according to the Urantia book, has to do with the respiration of Urantia beings. Okay, so these are guys who are somewhat outside of our physical realm. They're expanded beyond it. Some people would consider them, like I did, transdimensional. So this is in a higher dimensional plane. Anyone who is within such atmosphere will retain a bit of it in terms of an afterglow. And you see this apparent afterglow in some of the archaic pictures of saints, because many of the saints were taken for higher education and training. People wouldn't consider that something, try to give it a more super spiritual kind of being, become sainted. But it was an easily observed thing that many of them carried around for a while, including myself. It was the afterglow. And it's sort of a glow that people had. But when you're there, you don't see it. It's not apparent. But when you bring back that part, which is atmospheric. So that was something that air was clean and special in a sense. But that extra bit of atmosphere wasn't necessary for myself. Yeah.
It was. What do you mean it was necessary for myself?
It wasn't necessary for myself. It's for the respiration of Morantia beings. Morantia.
And were the people as happy as they were on Bali?
Happy. They're busy. Mm-hmm. I got to say they're very energetic. Exactly the opposite of how I feel right now. Jet lag. And yeah, so it's something that was the number one observed thing about why I would take from it. They were so energetic. It just seemed to be like the, worse than the Energizer Bunny Rabbit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm. Because I wasn't very old. I was 19 years old, 18 or 19, I think. And they were more energetic than I was. I think I was pretty good shape at that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you were 19, you had a lot of energy, but you still saw them as very energetic.
Yeah.
And they're old. They're a lot of them.
They're really old. I mean, my guide was, I said, you look like you're 10 years old, you know. And if you go on YouTube and look for that guy there, you know, he was, you know, his type, their images was caught on YouTube. People filmed them. Looks exactly like my guide. And you see his face, he looks like 10 years old, you know, when he got a big head, you know, big round globus head. When you look from the top, his head is kind of got a flat spot in the back. So it looks kind of triangular, you know, from the top looking down. Yeah, so the back of his head is somewhat flat. But it's like a look from the top down, you see. His forehead is rounded and then it has flatter sides, expanding out to a broad, flat back of his head, not round. So, yeah, that's how he was. Maybe somebody else, some of the other ones weren't that way, but obviously that was one of the things I wanted to always remember was because I had a top view of his head all the time, you know. And that was one of the things I observed. So he, very energetic, and he was old. He says, well, how old are you? He says, well, you'll have a hard time relating to it, but believe me, I'm a lot older than 10 years. And he gave me a hint. He said, when he introduced me to the resurrection chamber or the regeneration chamber, whichever one you want to call it. For him, it's a regeneration chamber. For myself, it would be more like a resurrection chamber. I would lose the physical body. I'd actually have an exchange of bodies. Because my physical body, the one I'm, or you and everyone else who is born a human being, you would lose that. If you go into that chamber and be exchanged for another body. But if your body was alive without you in it, it'd just be a catatonic state. And it's, you know, you see these kinds of people in some of the, you know, hospitals. I remember my mom would describe some of these women that she described. There were many times went through great trauma in the mental hospital. They were totally catatonic. And you could feed them, you know, you'd be, put them up, turn them around, walk them, put them down on a chair. They're not there mentally, but if you want to feed them, they'll open their mouth and you can put some food in it and they'll swallow it like baby food. But then, other than that, that's all they were. And what had happened, I believe, this is not maybe what really happened, I don't know, but my feeling is that, you know, in World War II, I mean, their love of their life died and got the message, and whatever it could have been was so traumatic that they left their bodies to be with, you know, their love of their life. So they left their bodies. When they did, it became that catatonic body. You know, I've seen that happen in, I mean, real time. And they do. You got to call them back. And if they don't come back, their body is in that state. And that's what would happen if we actually get transitioned. Our physical bodies would just exist in that terrible state. I was warned that your body told me your body would die. But he said he was in there many times. My guide went through that process many times, he said. And basically he says you live forever. You'll never die. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's a technology. One that is held by them, you know. Some other alien race may not have it. Hmm. Yeah, so. But at least those that I was influenced by, guided by, invited to Tan and Nella, that group, they had that Star of David logo type thing on there. Only Tan had it. Looked like a Star of David, but it had 7 points, but the hidden point would rotate around as like a Manerka or something, you know, because mm-hmm. it was holographic. You glance at it, it looks like a Star of David, but you look at it for a while and you can see it sort of turn around holographically and have 7 points. You count the points, and as you count the points, it revolves around and you can see the 7th point. And then go, oh, it's got 7 points, really. Yeah. Only the Madurka has that. Anyway, it's a symbol of, I'd say, their group, which is the right one to be involved with. Mm-hmm.
So your jet lag is catching up to you?
Sound like it already.
Well, that's what you said. And
yeah.
And you're talking about, you know, leaving your body and your physical body will die. And,
mm-hmm.
and then you just slowly. But, so jet lag. So, well, that's jet lag coming back to Maui, isn't it?
Yeah, I didn't think I would have the same problem as I did visiting the Baltic area, you know, going up. Just 12 hours. The same 12 hours apart from the East Coast, but it was only 6 hours. Mm-hmm. To Hawaii, it was 12 hours away. Mm. The Baltic is like 12 hours away from Hawaii, but still, you know, need a day for day or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, a couple of days to accustom to their time zone.
It Yeah, it's easier to get accustomed to their time zone because it just means you stay up a little later.
Yeah, it is easier heading east than heading west.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry, other way. When you're coming east, it's
harder.
It's a little harder.
You got to wake up earlier.
Unless it takes you 24 hours to get there, and then, that would be nice.
No, even then, your body clock got to...
Yeah, you're shot for 24 hours.
At least.
Well, it's nice.
And if you don't get it straightened out, then you end up going through the cycle over again, mm-hmm. over again. Oh, I think I reset it now. Oh, you fell asleep. Oh, shucks.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's what's been happening to me because I didn't have to go to work.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. Well, we could let you rest and say aloha and record next time when you're probably totally back.
Uh-huh.
But you were gone for quite a while. I think you were gone like 3 weeks. It's been...
Oh, yeah. Well, I was preparing to go. Yeah, preparing to go all over, doing a lot of odd jobs and stuff, getting it. Still, part of my roof blew off, so I barely could even do anything.
You mean while you were gone?
Well, it was just roofing paper, you know. The wind got really strong. I didn't know. Never saw that happen before. But anyway, that was... not a nice surprise. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's good we have the sun to cause the wind, but sometimes it's just a bit too much.
Yeah. So this kind of weather is, you know, not usual. Going through unusual wet season right now. Well, it's not like the whole world is going through weird weather, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we're on the East Coast, and finally it's going to get warm this week. Where you don't have to get all bundled up to go outside, and all of a sudden outside is like inside. It's just like, oh, the whole world just changes quite a bit.
Yeah.
It's nice, but, we'd all like to see what the New Jerusalem's like. We hear about it from your eyes. And I was talking up to the Urantia book while you were gone a little bit, and people just look at you with that blank look on their face. They've never heard of that. And the more I tell them, the more it's just like, oh, really? Yeah, check it out. You can read it on the internet, and you can listen to it on the internet. And it's magnificently written. It's in English. And in Wikipedia it says it was written by celestials. And no one's taking credit for it. It's not copyrighted. And it's you can get it on the internet rather cheap. If people are subsidizing or helping to pay for those books to be printed.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand there are many different languages now. But it's nice to have you make it clear for us. So the mag train looked like it was old.
And been used for a while.
But they usually everything in Japan was so clean.
Uh huh.
And China, that wasn't clean.
I don't know. They don't polish it.
They didn't polish it.
Yeah. Well. Anyway. Yeah. It's almost like they made all these highways and stuff, and everybody wants a car. who want to ride a train. That's their level of ambition. Everybody has to, family of grandma, mom, pop, grandkids, at least have one car for all that, all of them. And, you know, we over here where we live, you know, two-car family, you know, well, it's almost a necessity, you know.
It is.
It's so common, you know. But there, you know, it's still, they're still progressing.
Were there more cars in China or more cars in Maui? On the road. Well, you said on the road there were eight lanes and there were hardly any cars.
Yeah, yeah. No, I didn't see any traffic jams. It was easy driving.
No traffic jams, yeah. But not everybody had a car in China like we have here.
Yeah, well, they have cars, but people seem to function without them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as you know, some of the inner city, you know, they didn't get to, you know, design their roads for cars because they're older parts of the city in Shanghai, and they weren't able to make them as wide and excessively wide as the brand new spots. So there was some traffic there, but not traffic flowed very well.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Maybe didn't have a rush hour or something.
Well, maybe it's time to say aloha and you can catch up on your jet lag.
Mm-hmm.
But it's nice to have you answer the phone and do a recording. And it's always good to hear about the New Jerusalem, different things.
Yeah, always compare where we are or what is expected of us, and I reflect on it while I'm, you know, experiencing the planet. Because my experiencing the planet is something that they kind of do, you might say, in a celestially vicarious way. You know, because they can come cruising by and fly by and take an observation like a drone would, but and I'm walking around rubbing shoulders with the culture is not something that they get to do every day. Anyway, that's just something that happens. So I'll say aloha and take care.
All right. Aloha, Michael. We'll talk to you next time. See you next
Tuesday.
Okay. Yeah. Aloha.